Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart-Centered Loving. I'm your host, Jim Brown, and want you to know, as always, that you're safe. No harm will come to you in this space. Of course, most of you listen to this after the live broadcast, so I'm not going to pick on anybody. Anyhow, my goal every week is to bring more love, more happiness and joy, compassion, peace and abundance into your life, or to open the door and have you walk into that. And I ask you each week to listen to the show with the goal of taking one thing out of it and implementing it into your daily life. One, the opening quote today is by Robert Louis Stevenson, and it is, "Don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds that you plant." The opening story, or I call joke, is called Smokin', without a G, in the Rain. Jane and Arlene are outside their nursing home having a drink and a smoke when it starts to rain. Jane pulls out a condom, cuts off the end, puts it over a cigarette, and continues smoking. Arlene, what in the hell is that? Jane, a condom. This way my cigarette doesn't get wet. Arlene, where'd you get it? Jane, you can get them at any pharmacy. Next day, Arlene hobbles herself into the local pharmacy and announces to the pharmacist that she wants a box of condoms. The pharmacist, obviously embarrassed, looked at her kind of strangely. She is, after all, over 80 years of age, but very delicately asked what size, texture, brand of condom she prefers. Doesn't matter, Sonny, as long as it fits on a camel. The pharmacist fainted. If you'd like to call in and chat while we're doing the show today, the chat-in number, or call-in number, if you will, is 657-383-0055. Now, last week, we started to talk about the mind-body-spirit connection. And what I'd like to do before we continue is to review what we covered last week. Because I just restarted this show after a year and a half or so, and I don't know how many people knew about it last week. But anyway, the way we started is my point of view about how life evolves or how we do is that we function in a soul group. And from what I've read, it's about 18. And not all of us are, in one life at the same time every time. And so we're sitting around in this I call it a magnificent ballroom. And in walks our creator, and I like to refer to our creator as a she. I think of what many people call God as like this amazingly loving mother. And, mom always takes care of us. At any rate, so she comes in and she says, "Hey, guys and girls and, souls, I got a deal for you. You get a lifetime scholarship to planet Earth. And you're going to be able to go there and learn all kinds of stuff." And then gives us this catalog. And Sylvia Brown, in one of her books, and I don't remember which one it was, she says there's something like 7 different majors that we have in life, whether it's finance or health or career or relationship, things like that. Anyway, so we're sitting here, and we then say, "Well, I want to learn this and learn that," and we're talking to each other, and one says, "Well, I'll do this," and so we come together, and somebody says, "Let's do this," and you say, "Okay, it's time for me to leave. How will I know when we'll meet?" And we don't know, and bang, off we go. And how many times have we met somebody and wondered, "Well, how did this ever happen?" I was talking to my wife, and we met on September 25th, 1966. And we were registering students to take religion classes or Sunday school. And she liked my blue eyes and said, "Hey, I'm going to," this is in Chicago, "I'm going to the Cub game today. You want to come with?" And next year we'll be married 50 years. So I'm thinking, the other day, I said, well, I wonder what would happen if the Cubs weren't in town that day. And you know, you look at all these things and how they mix together, and things that we think of as coincidence that are amazing in how they're choreographed. So that's how I started. And there's tons of teachers in life, but just some of those teachers would be the problems we have. Love is a teacher. Fear is a huge teacher. Change is a teacher. Our relationships are teachers. Obstacles. Pain is a teacher. Success is a teacher, as well as failure. Mistakes are teachers. So these are just a few of the teachers we have. And the way that works is, like, I don't know how it worked with you when you were in grammar school, but when I was in third grade, we learned the multiplication tables. And you started with the two timetable, and you know, you didn't go to the three timetable until you learned the two times table. And that's the way life goes. You don't get to go to the next problem until you learn this problem. And we all know that, you know, somebody comes to us and they present a problem to us, and if we don't get it 3 months or 6 months or a year later, a different person, different costume, different disguise, comes into our life with the same, quote-unquote, problem. And we got to learn how to deal with it. Meanwhile, I learned that it seemed like there was a jerk everywhere I worked. Anyway, the next thing that we talked about is setting your life up as a corporation. And you want to set it up like you're the chairman of the board. And you're going to have 7 department heads. And we talked about them in detail last week, but we're not. If you want to get that, you can go back to last week's program. The 7 department heads we mentioned were your mind, your body, your spirit, your heart, your ego, your personality, and your soul. So that was basically what the show was about last week in a capsule. So let's continue. First thing I want to say is that today we're talking about the balance between our mind, our body, and our spirit. And to me, if I were to describe the world's problems in one phrase, that phrase would be lack of balance. So let's look at how we balance it and what we're talking about. I want to start with the spirit, the soul, the heart. And I find it interesting, you know, as I think of the heart, there's two hearts. There's the physical heart, which they do say has a brain, and it starts with like 40,000 cells. And then there's the emotional heart. So we've got the spirit, the soul, the heart. The soul, I was taught as a Catholic, that's who we are. Now, I think one of the problems we have when we have conversations is the words we use and the meaning we give to the words. And it really doesn't matter what word you use. It's, you know, the first time our youngest son said to me that he saw God as energy. Oh, my God, that was terrible. What do you mean? I was taught, you know, God was a man and he was this and not. And now, when you look at it, all life is energy, and energy vibrating at different levels. And our challenge is to get out of that quicksand energy, that heavy, deep, negative energy, and vibrate at a higher level. And to be able to, you know, as when we get into that deep, negative stuff, recognize we're in it, and let's get out of it. So the traditional components of the spirit in my mind, obviously the first thing would be a soul. And that's what I want to, you know, look at is our soul and what is our relationship to our soul. And how do you, or how do I, become great listeners of the soul. If, in fact, what we did is who we are is a soul, and this soul came into this body to be able to express and grow and learn through the use of the body, then we get that who we are is a spirit or a soul in a human body having a human experience for the purpose of growth, our higher growth, our spiritual growth, our evolution as a singular soul and as a collective soul. I mean, is it coincidence that 7.2 billion of us are alive here on this planet today, struggling with things like the climate of the planet, of still thinking that killing each other is a way to solve our problems, things like that? Is that coincident? Or are we here to raise that level of energy so that we move beyond that heaviness, beyond that negativity? This is just a question for you to contemplate. The next thing I think of when we're talking about components of the spirit is to have faith. And I mentioned to you last week that I'm writing a book called I Believe in God, but Don't Trust Him. And belief is having faith. And if we're going to have a belief and we're going to have faith in whatever we call it, something bigger than ourself. In other words, you and I together have more power than you or I alone. And you and I being 100 of us, 1,000 of us, 1,000,000 of us, 1,000,000,000 of us have more power than any individual alone. So we want to look at that, how we come together collectively and how we have a faith that we can make a difference. I know for years I wanted to write a book. Like I may have mentioned to you that I co-authored a book with Jack Canfield, and I know Jack through the National Speakers Association, but if you called Jack and said, hey, you know Jim Brown, I go, who the heck's Jim Brown? But I wanted to have a bestseller book like Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, you know, and they were even told that they weren't authors. They've sold 550 million Chicken Soup for the Soul books before they sold it. That's a pretty big author. Call it whatever you want. Anyway, so that was my ego speaking. We'll get into that in a little bit. But my challenge, we've been to over 100 countries, and I've given up the concept of comprehending the world and said, no, I got to reduce it to my world. And my world are the people I talk to and see on a daily basis. So the challenge is, like, here I am sitting here talking to you, not knowing who you are or what impact the message that I'm trying to deliver is going to have on your life. And my challenge is to accept that I'm a messenger and I deliver the message, and then the rest is up to you and what I'll call God or the universe or spirit, whatever you want to call it, that you'll work together to evolve to get the focus in your life to where you claim your divine inheritance, to live a life of abundance, to live a life of love. Doesn't matter what happened in the past. That's over. Today is all you have. You don't have tomorrow. You don't have yesterday. You have today. So live today with the idea of what do you want with your life? How do you want to live here and have the most amount of joy, of love, of peace, of abundance that you can possibly have? Which would bring me to my next point, which would be either beliefs or beliefs in miracles. I speak on cruise ships, I'm sure I've mentioned before, and whether it's a cruise ship or whether it's a program I do called Stress as a Point of View, and I ask audiences, okay, what causes stress? And then I just respond to what they say causes stress. And on this one particular cruise, we're going through the Panama Canal, and there was a guy, when they say something about what I want to say, about not having enough time. Time is the most democratic thing there is in all of life. So I'll ask if anybody in the audience has ever received a terminal diagnosis. And almost always there is somebody. And this particular day, this guy said that he had had cancer. And he said that he was told that he had 30 days to live. And that was 20 years ago. So the question is, do you believe in miracles? And a miracle is something that you and I think, oh, that can never happen. Again, I'm, you know, when I relate this story, I'm talking to people who are older, and that is that it was written in the medical journals in 1953 that it was anatomically impossible for a human being to run a mile in less than 4 minutes. And the next year, 1954, Roger Bannister, who was a graduate student, I think at either Oxford or Cambridge, in either case in England, he ran a mile in under 4 minutes. And within 1 year, 26 more men ran a sub-4-minute mile. So this was something that was held to be humanly impossible by medical journals and was done. And that's basically what a world record is. A world record is somebody going someplace that nobody has ever gone before, usually in terms of the time that we're talking about, whether we're talking about swimming or track or you know, whatever it happens to be. So no matter what's going on in your life, you want to hold the belief that a miracle is possible. Now, why do we have trouble with that? Because our ego jumps in and says, well, how is that possible? Science says it can't be done. Doctors say it can't be done. Blah, 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 blah. How can it be done? In other words, we have to know the method that this cure would take, this healing would take, that this transformation would take, whatever it happens to be. And that's where we get messed up. When our boys were little, we had given them 1 year at Christmas time the Sears catalog. And said to circle what they wanted for Christmas. So they circle all this stuff. And, you know, I, coming from a left-brain analytical background, tote it all up. And I said it was $1,200 worth of stuff. And I said to my wife, this is, you know, I don't know, around 1980. I said to my wife, what is this? It's $1,200 worth of stuff. She said, you didn't tell them how much they could circle. And when you're a little kid, mom and dad ask you what you want for Christmas, you don't wonder, or for your birthday, or for Hanukkah, or for whatever, you don't wonder, how are they going to get it? Can they afford it? And I think that's the same thing we want to do when we sit and we pray about wanting a miracle and say, this is what I want. And then you leave it to whoever you're praying to the universe, the spirit, to God, to let them come up with how that's going to happen. Because they're way beyond our evolutionary comprehension. They can, you know, God can be more, is everywhere at the same time. We can't even comprehend being here and there at the same time, let alone everywhere at the same time. God can be with, you know, can talk to all of us at the same time, or listen to all of us at the same time. And blah, 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 blah. We can go on and on and on about it. So that's the challenge, is you can see everything as a miracle or nothing as a miracle. And the thing when we're talking about our beliefs is we got to be willing to let go of beliefs that no longer serve us. That's the key. You know, if a belief serves you, great, keep it. If it doesn't serve you, let it go. Because beliefs are given to us by other people who have insecurities and saying, well, this can't happen, that can't happen. And when you say you're going to do something, or you express a dream or a goal or something like that, and someone else says, oh, well, you know, you can't do that, What they're saying is, I couldn't do it if it were me. And I saw Miguel Ruiz on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday a week or so ago, and he's the author of The Four Agreements. And the first agreement is, don't take anything personally. And he basically says, nothing is personal. Everything has got to do with the other person. And when the other person says, blah, blah, you can't do that, Jim. You're too old for that, or, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, whatever. And we buy into it. They're saying, I couldn't do that, or, you know, based on, you know, I wouldn't do that. That's their stuff. So always remember, whenever somebody says something that has a tendency to want to bring you down, remember, it's not personal. It's never, ever, ever about you. It's always about them. And next week, I'm going to get into loving yourself. And that's one of the problems we have. Is we're taught to, you know, please everybody else, and, you know, at the expense of pleasing ourselves, and seek other people's opinion and all that kind of stuff, when, hey, we got it all in here. And we're going to start working on that with the next show, about how we come inward and go inside and be true to ourselves and get, hey, this is who I am. You heard all this other stuff that's voodoo or magic, and I get a kick out of the word magic because magicians always frustrated me on the cruise ships, and I go see a magician until finally I figured out a 5-year-old kid could stump me. So I just sit back and enjoy it. And they don't call them magicians anymore. They call them illusionists. And what if we call life an illusion and say, hey, this isn't real. What's real? And I got to go inside myself and find out what's real. I go into my heart because I'm true to myself and I know what's true for me. And my saying what's true for me negates the word or phrase, the truth. Because in my belief system, all there is what's true for me today. And in order to find that out, I have to have my truth meter on all the time. And I have to go into my heart in order to find where the truth is, where my truth is. If I use my brain, my left brain, then what's going to happen is my ego is going to get involved. And it's going to start all this stuff. But what if this, or what if that, and, you know, you don't do this, and you don't do that. And that's, you know, that's stirring the, excuse the phrase, the shit pot. And that's what the ego's job is to do that. So moving on, prayer is basically me having a conversation with my creator. And have that conversation like you would with anybody else. Talk to God like he's your best buddy. And I do it all the time, and I'm amazed at the answers I get. The one time I'm talking to God, and I'm hearing this stuff, and I'm going, you know, this is all my imagination. And the answer I get back is, what better place to meet you? And another time I was saying, hey, I went to this place to conduct a board retreat, and the guy brought his wife, and she said my dad was on my right shoulder and a possible future granddaughter is on my left shoulder. I didn't have any idea what she's talking about. And I get home, and I talk to God. I could have talked to God when I was still there. And I said, what is this? I went there to conduct a board retreat. And the answer I got was, I had to get you there. So now, everywhere I go, okay, I think I'm here for this. Let's wait and see why God has me here. And, you know, it's a game. And all of life is a game. This little silly stuff that people play, you know, about money and about this and about that. It's that's not the... That's the how does this thing go? That's the sizzle. That's not the steak. The stake of life is learning to love, learning to express that love for self, that love for others, learning to grow, learning to expand, learning to see things in unlimited ways rather than in limited ways. So prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to God. And there's no right way to do meditation. Just, you do it. As we get older, hopefully we have access to a higher sense of wisdom. And, you know, people say, well, you're smart. I don't consider myself smart at all. I do think that as I've gotten older, I've gotten wiser. And getting to see a bigger picture of life and how it all comes together. And not accepting that there's one way to see anything. And seeing, hey, what's another way to look at this? That's a challenge for each one of us very often. Next thing is simply would be to have a sense of peace. And I think that when we get in touch with ourselves and we feel, we feel that sense of peace, then we're in touch with ourselves. And we're talking here basically about the battle between the ego and the heart, the ego and the soul. And the heart wants peace. The heart wants love. And the heart wants to expand who we are. The ego wants to say, you're not good enough. Look at this, look at this, look at that. And you, when you get to recognize the sound of the voice of the ego, then you say, hey, that's not who I am. I don't want that. I want this sense of peace. Now, the example I like to use in terms of a sense of peace is a hurricane. And the only place you want to be in a hurricane is in the eye of the hurricane. Because in the eye of the hurricane is total calm, total peace. The more you move away from the center of the eye of the hurricane, the greater the forces of the hurricane, the destructive forces of the hurricane, the destructive forces of life are there to get you and sweep you away. So always look to stay at peace, and when you're getting away from the sense of peace, look to move back into the sense of peace. And all of this requires an awareness. And we have to have that awareness, that awakenedness, and we got to pay attention to it. For example, I have an inflamed tendon on the side of my right foot. And I went to the doctor, the podiatrist. And he gave me a shot, and when we were on the last cruise, I was out walking, and it somehow got inflamed, and I went back to him, etc. And I notice that when I sit, this is on my right foot, I cross my left foot over my right ankle, and then my right foot is on the side with the weight on the ground on the part that's inflamed. And my point is it's like I've probably been doing that all my life and never noticed it. And now I notice it and I got to pay attention because it's almost automatic. It's not something I think about. I sit down and my legs cross automatically. So the first thing is that I have to become aware of it, and then I have to become aware of it every single time because our learning is a process. And that's all life is a process. Life is not an event. We don't learn, bang, go, bang, bang, bang. It's not a series of events. It's a process. It's an evolution. It's a growing. It's something that you want to be aware of. And each one of us is in our own life classroom. And each one of us has different ways to learn. Donna Markova wrote a book. years ago called The Art of the Possible. And in there, it talked about visual learning, auditory learning, and kinesthetic learning. And we all learn differently. So how I learn and how you learn aren't going to be the same way. Maybe they might be, but then again, they may not be. So we're all going to have different ways that we're going to learn. That's why when I speak to people, it's much more fun having you in front of me live where I can see you, whereas now I don't know where you are in the world. They tell me, and next week the announcement, the email that goes out for the program will now be, you'll be able to open it on your phone, and it does whatever, you know, it does on the phone. I don't have a smartphone, so actually I do. It's so smart. It stays in my car and off. I lost my train of thought. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Ever happened to you before? Oh, I'm talking about how I was, being in front of you in a live audience versus not knowing who you are or where you are in the world makes a difference. And I like to interact with people. So as I said earlier, we have a chat room on here. Of course, I don't know how many people are actually listening at the time it's live. But if you are and you want to call in, I'm at 657. I'm not. The call-in number is 657-383-0055. So back to wherever we were, we were talking about having a sense of peace. And that's really important to have that sense of peace and to be able to come back into that place of peace when our ego yanks us out and wants us to get into controversy and conflict and anger and guilt and being the boss and control and all that. All that stuff is ego stuff. Nothing else. Surrender. When I talk about that, and I mention things multiple times, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because my oldest son is the only one I've ever known that you tell him something once and he gets it. So we want to hear things over and over and over again, and get this. I've been doing this for 25 years or longer, and I'm still trying to get it. So it isn't like I'm standing here as the professor on how to live life. I stand here as, as they do a lot of times in graduate school, where you've got, graduate students are teaching undergraduate students, and that's all we're doing. We're here to teach and learn from each other at the same time. So I'm here to open this up, to hopefully open your mind up to thinking, hey, I can try this or try that, or that doesn't make any sense, or whatever. You just move on and you take your power back, and you get that your life is filled with choices. No matter what anybody tells you, I'm saying that your life, you have an infinite supply of choices. And if the way it is going for you right now isn't working, choose again, choose again, choose again. And as I've told you on almost every show I've done, Terry Cole Whitaker's book, What You Think of Me Is None of My Business, that can be your guiding light of your life. What I think of you is none of your business. Be true to yourself. Live your life the way you want to live it, not the way anybody else tells you to live it. Now, they tell us, the ubiquitous they tell us, that everything's inside of us. So all you have to do then is to believe that there is an inner knowing, that there is an intuition, there is a higher sense. And you then have to just turn that radio on and tune in to your inner knowing. And your inner knowing doesn't need guidance from anybody else. Because who's there in your inner knowing? Your spiritual team, a collective voice, is there as your part of your inner knowing. You're being guided. Hear the guidance. Listen to the guidance. Be true to the guidance. And trust yourself. And trust this process. and you know that you can do it. You know, I don't know. I do this on headphones, and it sounds like every once in a while something is there's a little space in here. So I'm going to listen to this when I get through to find out if there is, and if there is, what I need to get corrected before next show. Okay, so then the next thing is the different rituals that we have. Actually, this is the last thing under talking about the mind, body, soul, or souls, you know. We have rituals which are called prayers. In the Catholic tradition, it's called Mass or Church or Rosary, you know, different types of prayers. These are the different rituals you have. And meditation is a ritual, you know, so whatever ritual you have, you know, cultivate it. Okay, so here we are. Look at this. How close am I? Probably not close, but we'll try and see what we can do to get through this. Uh-oh, I'm not even halfway through my notes here. Let's talk about creating the balance. And most of us, all of our life, have just seen ourselves as a body. That's, you know, that's the way we were taught. We are the body. And the Catholic Church taught me that we're the soul, and the soul predates the body, and the soul exists in the body, and the soul will exist after the body ceases to exist. And I got that now. I've got that. I know that I'm in my home right now. I am in my home. I am not my home. When I get done here and I go to Starbucks, I get in my car. I am not my car. I know that with 100% assurity that I am not my home, I am not my car, and I also know I am not my body. But, like my car is going to get me from point A to point B, my body is going to get me from life to death. So I need to take good care of my body, don't I? So I want to see my body as a temple, because this is the only body I'm getting during this lifetime. So I want to take good care of it. I want to watch the food that I eat. I want to be able to exercise. Of course, I didn't go this morning, but again, I'm learning with you. I try to go to gym 5 days a week and do an hour cardio. Of course, I've got people there that tell me I have to do more than the cardio. Anyway, moving on. Again, we're not taught that you taking care of yourself has to be your number one priority. I got a note from a friend yesterday saying he wishes that I was closer because he's losing a loved one, and my intuitive sense is that it's his mom. And he says he's wearing out emotionally. And what we have a tendency to do is to do everything for another person. And those of you who are called moms are the worst at this, because you were taught take care of your husband first, then take care of your children. You know, and if there's anything left over, it's for you. And that just doesn't work. You got to come to this game of life with a full tank of gas. You got to fill yourself up first. You got to take care of yourself. You've got to nurture yourself. You were taught that taking, you know, thinking of yourself first is being selfish. Taking care of you is not selfish. It's the most selfless thing you can do. So that when you come into a relationship, and that's all life is a series of relationships, you come into relationship with the rest of us, you come with a full tank. You come rested, you come nurtured, you come having taken care of yourself so that you're in a position now to give to other people without running on an empty tank. And that includes, beside the food and the exercise and, let's say, massages or whatever you do to take care of yourself, Medical care is huge. You got to. That's part of taking care of yourself. And whatever that means for you, that doesn't necessarily mean traditional Western medicine. It can mean alternative medicine. It can mean healers. It can mean whatever it means to you. Not to anybody else. Because remember, what I think of you is none of your business. Your career and dealing with your career is extraordinarily important. Because there's stress involved with that. There's stress involved with life. And stress, I define, you know, my program on stress is called Stress as a Point of View. So I don't believe anything causes stress. I believe that the cause of stress is the way you choose, and I underline in bold choose, to react, not respond, to react to the event. And what you want to do or what you want to look at is say, well, who else could be going through the same event and not seeing it as stressful? In other words, what would I have to believe in order for this not to be stressful? One of the problems we have, as I mentioned earlier, when I ask what causes stress, is people always say, not enough time. Well, the issue isn't not enough time, but what we were taught and what we allowed to happen in our life is to allow the urgent things of life to take precedent in our life. And we never get to the important things. In my program on balance between our professional and personal life, I then ask people to make a list of the five most important things in your life. Now think about doing this. Make a list of the five most important things in your life. And now, how much time do you spend on each one of those things in a week? So we're talking about what's important. So the important stuff is what should be running your life, not the urgent stuff. Don't be afraid to say, no, I can't do this. I don't have the time. It's too stressful for me. Whatever your reason for not wanting to do it, be truthful. Guess what? People are going to talk about you no matter what. So get over it. People are going to talk about you. Let them talk about you. No matter what you say, no matter what you do, no matter how you are, people are still going to talk about you. Be true to yourself. Live your life for yourself, not for anybody else. So that when the day that becomes the last day that you're in this body, you don't have any regrets. Live your life fully so that when it's over, you say, wow, I did it all, and I was true to myself. I loved myself. I played. I cried. I was tortured. I had a broken heart. I had money. I didn't have money. You know, and we go through all of it, and you say, hey, I didn't allow fear to run my life. So again, focus on what's important in your life. Now, one of the things that may be important is dating your wife, dating your children. And somebody says, Susan, can we get together at 6 o'clock? And you say, no, I have a meeting. Well, the meeting happens to be a date with one of your children. I talked to my sister Deb for her birthday last week, and she has 2 14-year-old grandsons, twins. And she has them over one at a time. And they spend the night with grandma. And then grandma does whatever Alex or Zach wants to do. She said, even though they get along, if I have the two of them together, you know, they're going to want to do different things. So she spends a weekend with Alex, another weekend with Zach, and she's thrilled because at 14, they still want to come to grandma's. So think of these things. Think of what's important to you in your life and put that on top of your list of things to do. To take care of yourself and then make time for others. We're moving right along. Oh my goodness, I got 15 more minutes. So we want to move into the role of the mind, the ego, and the personality in your life. We talked about you being the chairman of the board of your life. You don't want to be a backseat driver in your life. You don't want to allow the ego to function as a spoiled brat. And lastly, you want all the aspects of the components of who you are to your mind, your body, your spirit, your heart, your ego, your personality, and your soul. You want them simply to be consultants, okay? You're in charge of your life. I don't know how many times I'll say that, but I want you to get it. You're in charge of your life. Not me, not your mother, not your father, your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, your children, your boss, you. And be true to yourself. Be true to who you are. And the next question becomes, what is the role that spirit or the soul is going to play in your life? You get to decide that. And you want to say, okay, I want that to be an active role. Then, don't you think every day you want to do something to make that active? And say, hey, we're going out for the day? Like you're going out with somebody else, like I would say to Rosemary, okay, let's go out for the day, and you plan the day. But we're planning to be together for the entire day. So plan to have your soul with you all day, every day. It is, whether you plan it or not, but the plan is to be aware that your soul is there with you, that your soul is there to quietly guide you. But you have to listen for this guidance. You get to decide what the role of the soul in your life is going to be. And in order to do that, you want to surrender the outcomes and the need to control. So you do something and there's an outcome. Whatever the outcome is what the outcome is. And then you look at that and see, what's going on with the outcome. One of the problems we have is our need to control. I still have that. I want to try and control my wife. And my suggestion on that is to, my email address is jim@jimbrownspeaker.com. You can send me your resignation as general manager of the earth. Surrender control of these things. Surrender control of how it has to be. And it's kind of like being in a river, the river of life, in a boat, and you don't have any oars. You can't control where life is going to take you. So go with the flow of life, trying to swim upstream. Esther Hicks, who channels an entity called Abraham, saying that everybody's rowing their boat upstream, and everything they don't want is upstream. Everything. And the question is asked, why are you rowing upstream? And the answer, she says, is because everybody else is rowing upstream. So if everything you don't want in life is upstream, and everything you want in life is downstream, what do you have to do to reverse going upstream to everything you don't want and going downstream where everything you want is? The answer, very simply, is to drop the oars in the water and let the stream take you to everything you want. In other words, stop resisting. And stop expecting that it's supposed to look like this or look like that. So you make those choices, and then you got to trust. Trust yourself. You got to trust the process of life. And I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, my mom always used to say to me, "Honey, someday you'll understand." And it's my firm belief that that's God's mantra to us all day, every day. Honey, someday you'll understand. So how many things do you have in your life that you don't understand? I don't understand how this works. I'm on my phone and I'm on the radio, and you can be anywhere in the world listening to me right now, or listening to me after I get done doing this live. I don't understand that, but I accept it. I don't understand how the fax machine works. When we go to Europe, I sure wish I could fax myself from Los Angeles to Rome instead of having to fly. I accept it. I don't know how my TV works, how my car works, how any of that stuff works. I accept it without having to understand how it works. I just trust it. I trust when I get on a ship, it's going to get from one port to the next port. I don't understand how that ship doesn't sink. I don't understand how an airplane is able to fly. But I accept it. So learn to surrender and accept things that we don't have control of. Now, I want to quickly get into our life gets out of balance. And we know, I mentioned earlier in the show, that if I would say the problem the world has is lack of balance, and your life gets out of balance, and I'm just going through three major areas here: relationships, money, and health. My opinion is that all of life is a relationship. The relationship starts with yourself, and in order for you to have a healthy relationship in life, the relationship with yourself has to be the healthiest. And in order to do that, you have to learn how to love yourself. And that's what the show is going to be about next week. And then we reach out. And to me, I got to have that relationship myself first before I can have a relationship with God. Because if my relationship with myself is lousy, then I'm going to think of God as this guy that's going to get me. That's G-I-T, get. So we have relationships. Money is an issue no matter what. I learned from Tony Robbins of the 80s that the difference between people who have a lot of money and people who don't have a lot of money is that the people who have a lot of money arrive at their problems in grander style. So we're all going to have money issues. The thing is we're accordion players. You learn how to live within the means of the amount of money that you have. And the goal is always to spend less money than you make. Simple as that. Health is another issue where life gets out of balance. The other day, I don't know if it was this desk chair or sitting Sunday on the couch reading the paper, and I got up from my desk here, and my back was hurt terribly. And so what I had to do is I slowed down, came to a complete stop. I haven't been out since Sunday to take care of my back. And being grateful for what I can do. And when I went to bed at night, last night and the night before, I beckoned my spiritual team to come to heal my back while I was sleeping. And it's about 95% better. I don't know how it happens. I don't know what happened. I don't care. My goal is to surrender it and to let it go. Now, I'm looking here at my clock and showing I have 5 minutes to go. And I have this set so I can run over. So just so you know, I'll probably run over. Oh, we just had somebody call in here. How about that? Let's see what that person is on 443. Surprise, surprise. Hi, this is Jim. Who's this?
Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
I called in to listen.
Oh, you didn't want to talk? Hello? Did you just wanted to listen? Okay. I guess she just wanted to listen. Anyway, I forgot what that happened. What happens with that? Okay, she's gone. She dropped. So we're into developing an action plan to bring your life back into balance. And that is, obviously, you're just taking a series of actions every time something happens to create a period between the time of the event and your response. So here's a couple questions to ask yourself when there's an event that takes you out of balance. And the first question here is, how would love respond to this situation? So think of it like your love. What that does, that gets us out of the ego, and it gets us into our heart, and it gets us into our soul. And we're going to respond from a totally different perspective if we're looking at it from the place of love, or from the place of our heart, or the place of our ego. Second question is, well, what would God want me to do right now? Now, I think of God, my loving mom. I don't think of God the way I was taught by the Catholic Church. I think of God as a woman, and I think of her as a nurturing, loving mom who I can sit in her lap, and she'll hold me, and she'll nurture me. And as mom used to do, you know, when you got a boo-boo, she'd kiss it and say, it'll be better, honey. And by the way, I'm going to do the Mother's Day show, and there is nobody in the world like mom. Nobody. You are amazing, moms. I mean, it's just, wow. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The next question I would ask would be, what's the highest meaning of this event? You know, we have our meaning, and usually the meaning we give it when we get out of balance is, oh, my God, this is terrible, this is a tragedy, blah, blah, blah. Well, what's the highest meaning? Or what is a deeper meaning to the event? Or how do I choose to respond? Remember, reacting and responding are two different things. You get to change from reacting to choose to respond, and respond the way you want. And the last question I have here to ask when you get out of balance is, what is this experience trying to teach me? That, again, it shifts you into a totally different place. So you want to be able to implement this plan, making changes until you're back in balance. Again, it's a process. And the way you're going to know you're back in balance is that you're going to feel a sense of peace. So quickly to close here, talking about the purpose of life, and I could spend God knows how long talking about the purpose of life. Number one, life is not a game of Monopoly. There's going to be a lot of disappointed people when they get to the end of life and they find out they didn't come here to play Monopoly, which is to get the most cars, the most boats, the most hotels, the most cash. Life is about growing your soul. So, if life is about growing your soul and dancing the dance of life with your soul, and having your soul be the lead in this dance, then remember that life is about having fun. So that's what I wanted to get through today. And now the closing quote is to always remember that you are absolutely unique, just like everybody else. And that's from Margaret Mead. Closing story. One night at 11:30, an older African-American woman was standing on the side of an Alabama highway trying to endure a lashing rainstorm. Her car had broken down, and she desperately needed a ride. She was soaking wet. She decided to try and flag down the next car. A young white man stopped to help her, generally unheard of in those conflict-filled times of the 1960s. The man took her safely to help her get assistance and put her into a taxi cab. She seemed to be in a big hurry, but wrote down his address and thanked him. 7 days went by, and a knock came on the man's door. To his surprise, there was a giant console color TV. Remember, this is in the 60s, delivered to his home. And this was the note that was attached. "Thank you very much for assisting me on the highway the other night. The rain drenched not only my clothes, but also my spirits. Then you came along. Because of you, I was able to make it to my dying husband's bedside just before he passed away. God bless you for helping me and unselfishly serving others. Sincerely, Mrs. Nat King Cole." So, again, next week's show is going to be learning how to love yourself from your heart. I ask you before we leave, what is the most important thing that you got out of today's program? You may want to keep a list of these things and title it Keepers. Add other keepers to your list as they're given to you. And share this program, today's program, with your friends and your family. And as always, I close by sending love from my heart to your heart. I ask you to receive this love and then share it. There is an infinite supply of love. Thank you. Bye-bye.